brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
You don't have to be good now. It doesn't matter if you win now either. Just be a part of it and continue to grow. Keep showing up to workouts. Go to camps. Keep trying out. If you're on the third team, fourth team, it doesn't matter for another 6 years. And I think conversations like that with kids need to happen more. I see kids coming to the gym stressed out of their mind.
Shane Hennen is a pro basketball skills trainer and the owner of Hennen Workouts based out of Des Moines, Iowa. Shane works with players of all ages and skill levels, including NBA G League players, and NBA pre-draft and overseas professional players and prospects. He has helped more than 50 boys and girls players achieve college basketball scholarships. Shane grew up on a farm in rural Minnesota and played 4 years of college basketball at Morningside University in Sioux Falls, Iowa. Hey, Hoopheads, this February, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering $1,250 off the Dr. Dish Rebel Plus. You can also subscribe to their 30-day free daily motivational email series for coaches. Check out their new goal-setting feature at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Roshan Russell, head boys basketball coach at St. Rita High School in Chicago, Illinois, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Get ready to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Shane Hennen, pro basketball skills trainer from Hennen Workouts.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome Shane Hennen from Hennen Workouts. Shane, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Thank you, man. And I think we connected a while back, so it's good to finally get on here.
Absolutely. Excited to have you on. Looking forward to diving into all the things you've been able to do and building your training business and working with people and working with players and helping them to improve their game. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about some of your first experiences with the game of basketball.
Yeah, for sure. I was blessed with a great dad. I grew up in a tiny town, like 300 something people, and my whole family are farmers in southwest Minnesota. So I was a big Timberwolves fan. So my dad, he used to record the Timberwolves games for me, and then we would watch them on VCR, and I'd watch Kevin Garnett and kind of that like 2000 to 2004 team that we had. And that's really how I fell in love with the game, was watching the Timberwolves. I was obsessed with the jerseys with the trees on it. I was obsessed with the floor. I was obsessed with KG. I used to look up KG stats and like compare them to like Kareem's and Wilt's and be like, yeah, KG's going to beat all these guys. Like I was just obsessed, and something that my dad fed into me, and not just basketball, but you know, he would come home from a long day of chores, right? And he'd be getting the baseball mitt and he would just throw for hours. And just something I very, very much appreciate now. But yeah, my basketball journey started there. Timberwolves, you know, getting out in the driveway. We had a slanted driveway with a old hoop on there, and I'd go to the elbow and do some face up stuff, anything that I could remember KG doing. So I even shot over the top of my head, which was probably not great because not great shooting for him. But that's, you know, that's who I was watching. That's who I was mimicking. So yeah, that's kind of how it started.
It's funny how you mimic your idols, right?
For sure. For sure. Like I said, man, I was so obsessed with KG, the trash talk, him headbutting the stanchion, like everything. I wanted to be just like KG.
What about the Marbury trade?
Marbury trade, you know what? That's kind of when I caught on after. You know, okay. I was when Marbury was there, I think I was trying to I was starting to get into it. My brothers were into it. I had two older brothers, and one of them was a big Marbury fan, and when he got let go, I think they just kind of stopped watching. And that's kind of right when I got into it. But man, we had a squad. I mean, you know, when I was really a really big fan is when we had Cassell.
Yep.
We had Zerbiak, we had Sprewell, we had Nesterovich, we had Ola Candy, we had Garnett. We had all these guys, right? And I think we fell short to the Lakers in 04. I think that's what happened. And then they lost to the Pistons that year. But man, we had some squads. That's when we were battling against the old the Kings roster with Weber and Christie and Bibby and all those guys.
Now you're lucky enough to have Rudy Gobert on your team.
Yeah, this is a blast, man. I know. We were just talking about your Cavs, and I instantly went to the standings because I live in Iowa now, so we don't get to watch the Timberwolves games. They don't pop up locally here. So, and I think even if I get NBA TV or League Pass or whatever, it's blacked out for some reason. I have no idea. But I don't get to watch the Wolves as much. I know it's disappointing. It's disappointing. And I love Timberwolves. I love all your Minnesota sports, and I get to watch the Vikings and the Twins, but those Timberwolves are hard to catch.
You mentioned your brothers. How much of your basketball development as a kid was you guys beating up on each other out on the driveway?
Yeah, you know what? It was that. Yeah, they just beat the hell. I'm not going to lie to you guys. They beat the crap out of me, man. It was, They're 1 year apart, and the middle child, Seth, he's 3-4 years older than me, and then I have another one that's 5 years or yeah 5 years older than me. So those two definitely had some battles, and you know, they one of them played basketball. I weren't super into sports, to be honest with you. I had, you know, growing up on a farm, you're just like surrounded, and with a small town, you're surrounded by family members. So like, you know, if I go back home, there's tons of Hennins everywhere, like across the street, or, you know, 2 miles away. They're everywhere. So I grew up with a ton of cousins and a ton of older cousins and younger cousins, and we all just kind of beat up on each other. We used to have I have a picture of it on my phone. I look back at it sometimes, but we used to have a hoop up in a hayloft with these warped boards that you couldn't dribble on. So we just like, you take one dribble and you get like 4 steps, and you know, and probably wasn't good for my ball handling development, but that's where everything went down, man. You take the wrong step and you go through the floor and there's hogs underneath you. So it was, it was just a lot of that just naturally growing up with older brothers.
That's a stereotypical,
physical.
That's a stereotypical rural basketball experience in the barn, right?
100%. Yep, for sure.
Was basketball always your number one thing? Did you play anything else as a kid?
Yeah, I loved everything, man. I just feel like I was blessed in Minnesota, to be honest, because I had Randy Moss, Kevin Garnett, I had Torrey Hunter. Those were my guys. Like Torrey Hunter's jumping over the wall and like snagging everything. Randy Moss is Randy Moss, right? He's just like jumping over dudes. Then I had KG. Like those three dudes were my guys. So I loved baseball. I played baseball all the way through high school. I was actually a really good player. I played football as well, and I was good at that. But when I got to my freshman year in football, I played throughout that season. And then somebody told me that I could go up to Minneapolis in the fall and play fall ball, like basketball. And I told my dad, I was like, dude, I'm sick of like, and I was, you know, I was like 6'1", 6 foot in as a freshman, like, I don't know, 150 pounds, maybe. Just, you know, and they loved who I was. I was just too skinny, and I was just getting the crap beat out of me. And I remember just feeling like, man, I love this game, but the practices suck. Like it just hurts, you know, it's freezing out here. And, so when somebody told me I could play in the fall, I approached my dad, and you know, those small towns, like if you don't play all those sports, you know, it really turns some heads. And I remember telling people like, hey, I'm not playing anymore. I'm going to go play basketball. And it's not common because there's nobody really that plays like club ball or AU ball from where I was from. There's really not a ton of resources. So I got some looks, you know, even the football coach, they weren't too happy with that decision, but it panned out pretty well for me. And it was a good mixture for me because going up to the cities where this competition, you know, I'm in small town, like class A, which is the smallest in Minnesota. I'm playing against 4A, 5A kids that are twice the size. I'm just getting the crap beat out of me, which is good and bad. You know, I'd go up there and get challenged and be like, holy cow, I gotta figure some stuff out. Then I'd come back home and I'd play the competition level that was, you know, my level or lower, and I'd be able to work on some things. Then I'd go test it. And it was just like this awesome process of getting high level talent to play against and being exposed to things and kind of a reality check and a change of speed. Then bring everything I just learned, go back home and play against, you know, kids my speed. And I think that actually that was a big help for me.
How are you working on your game outside of the games that you were playing in as you're going and you're playing in the fall league and you're working on playing against better competition when you were by yourself?
Yep.
Working, just thinking about, again, what you do now compared to maybe what you did as a player.
Yep. You know, I it's funny because parents will come up to me that, you know, kids that I train or whatever, they'll be like, yeah, I bet you worked real hard. And I'm like, no, dude, I didn't know anything. I just like, I think the, my biggest piece of success was, I did more than the other people around me. And just by doing more and being athletic, you're going to win. I mean, you're going to beat out a lot of kids that don't touch a ball till winter season. Right. And the other thing too, that I think, really helped me and I see as a struggle now in the development world is this idea of like visualizing things and seeing things in front of you and training that way. I wish that I probably had some more structure, some more drill work to like really get things sharp with my feet and my hands. But as far as just raw natural, like ability to score and like see angles, I had all that and it went all the way back to me, like in the driveway, pretend I was Kevin Garnett and, you know, Chris Webber was guarding me and I would be hitting with jabs and I could see him. I could literally feel like he was there. And that stuck with me all the way through high school. And I, you know, I remember too in high school, like you become a good shooter. I felt like I was a great game shooter and not a good drill shooter. If a coach ran me through drills, I would probably be actually pretty inconsistent, but I mean, when I go shoot by myself, I was shooting one footers. I was shooting stuff off balance. Like I was just doing all of this, like kind of, different type of shooting drills, just like, more random practice than anything. And, that helped me a ton when it came to just shooting in a game and just being ready for just whatever and being able to shoot at different footworks and different stances and off the dribble and fading a little bit or fading left, fading right, adjusting my form or adjusting my shot because my body's going one way. That all felt so natural to me. But if somebody said, hey, you know, pull the ball to your pocket with your left hand, like I doubt I could have done that. So yeah, that's kind of how it went for me was I did more than I was asked to do. I loved the game and I watched the game a ton. And yeah, that's, you know, in a small town, that's kind of all it takes to be special. If I could go back, obviously I would work probably a lot harder, but you know, it didn't know any better.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's one of the things that when you look or you talk to people and they either think about how they worked on their game and especially obviously, as you well know, the training business in the last 5, maybe 10 years has completely exploded compared to what it Sure. was at any point before that, where nobody even knew what a trainer was. Let alone worked with one. And so you think back to anybody pre that era, you know, you're also talking about as YouTube comes online and you can go and now you can find any workout, any drill, you can be creative and have all these things. I always say that, you know, when I was a kid and working on my game, like I had two workouts. I had a workout I did when I was by myself and I had a workout I did if I had a partner. And it was basically the same thing that I did from the time I was, you know, maybe a junior high player up through college. I mean, I worked on the same, it was the same workout. And now I look at all the creative stuff and different things and ways that you can improve. And I'm just like, man, I wish I would have grown up and been able to be exposed to some of that stuff. And, you know, makes you wonder how much more you could have developed your skill level. But again, it was just a different era, different time. And that's
very different for sure.
Yeah.
That's and I think, there's pros and cons to everything now too, because we're seeing some cons obviously with the amount of training and trainers available and, you know, definitely some good things for sure. Like kids are more skilled than I ever was, at their age. And, you're seeing a lot of that stuff, but you're also seeing some negative stuff when it comes to, kids having access to a bunch of games on a weekend. Right. And, you know, trainers and them getting used to somebody telling them what to do all the time. And, or maybe they're lacking some of that visualization or creative piece to it. And the game transfer. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't know what it would be like to grow up right now with all this, with all every resource. I honestly feel like I'd probably be a little bit confused as a kid, you know, seeing everything on social. Like, you see moves, you see workouts, you see different, you know, philosophies when it comes to training. You know, everybody's trying to, you know, preach one thing and then the other guy's saying the complete opposite. Like, I feel like I'd actually be pretty confused. But if you can figure it out, like if you're a kid out there and you can figure it out and you can find a good coach and you can do well, man. I mean, it's crazy because I could go on Instagram right now and I guarantee you there's probably like five NBA clips in my feed that are in slow motion where I could break down every single step and when the ball hit the floor, right? And how they did this and how they did that. I just don't know that we had access to that. You know, I know even in like 2000 to 2011, we didn't have full access to that either. So yeah, I don't know what it would be like now. I think I might be a little bit confused, honestly, as a kid.
Yeah, you're right. I think it almost overwhelmed, right? Where you could go on.
Yeah.
There's a million things that I can look at. How do I figure out what's actually valuable and what's not and what's appropriate for my level and what's not? It's almost like you need a trainer just to help you pick out things that you could do. It's kind of crazy when you think about the amount of content that's out there. I do think that, you know, what you said about kids today being more skilled, we've said that in a lot of conversations here on the podcast, just talking about how you look at the 11th or 12th player on a high school team today, how skilled they are compared to 20 or 30 years ago, where every team back then, you know, you had the 6'2", 220-pound football kid who just set screens and rebounded. You know, every high school had that player on their team. And now those guys really don't exist anymore. And you look at everybody can shoot the ball, and you look at the ball handling and the things that kids can do with the ball. It's not really even comparable. And yet I think you make a great point when you start talking about kids' ability to be creative or visualize the game. Or I think from a basketball IQ standpoint, I'm not sure that that is advanced nearly as fast as the skill level has. I think still your best players obviously still have that, but I don't think the IQ has progressed as fast as the skill set at the end of the bench.
100%. You know, I left the gym a couple hours ago and I had a session where I had two kids in there, and you know, I had a middle school girl and then two boys come in after, and we decided to play like just some face up one-on-one stuff, like free throw line. If you get outside the lane lines, you're out of bounds. You get three dribbles to score. So it's kind of tight and you have to use your jabs and stuff like that. The first five reps, these two middle school boys, the first thing they do is, pound the ball on the outside of their hip. I'm like, dude, this is not the time for that, you know? And it's not even just that example. It's a bunch of those situations where it's almost like where something can be very simple. And I told them this too. I was like, anytime you're in triple threat and it's one-on-one, there's no help side. It's a rip. It's a jab. It's a shot. And you're going to, once you get them displaced, it's a downhill attack. You get in front of them, you score. If they cut you off, you spin, you stop and bump, whatever. That's how simple it is. That's not the bag time. You know what I mean? That's not time where we slam brakes and we change directions a bunch. That's not it. That comes later when there's bad closeouts and they're flipping their hips and like all this other stuff. And I think the more simple things can be, I think kids get even more confused in those situations, which is obviously the opposite of what should happen. And I think about my whole game in high school, man. It was like shoot a three. If I was wide open, if they soft close, I would jab, then shoot the three. And then they hard close, I would just rip and go, you know? And it was, obviously the competition level I was playing against maybe wasn't the highest. But again, I was just the same as everybody else when it came to everybody's athletic ability. So I was playing in my field. So yeah, I know it's something that's really played a big role in my, training philosophy. You know, as much as I love everything, I love footwork, man. It's like, I'm obsessed with that stuff. I love giving kids tools. I love seeing kids discover something new and being able to push out their comfort zone. But it is one of the most kind of frustrating things when you see a kid who's just like, dude, just jab and go, man. Like, look how high that leg is. Just rip that leg, right? Or flip their hips and get into the body and then just finish. So it's definitely played a role in my philosophy when it comes to training, just kind of keeping things simple.
Yeah. Simplicity wins. That's what I was going to say. I mean, I think if you can, when you start talking about what most kids need to do, right? If they could just master those simple things that you're talking about, then boom, all of a sudden you've got a really good player on your hands. And now as they continue to progress, you can maybe add some of the things that are a little bit more complex. But there's so many players out there that don't do those little simple things well. And as a result, it's a struggle. So I think if you can give them those simple basic tools
100%.
To be able to attack a defense, all of a sudden, boom, that thing all starts to come together. Because I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there that you got to make 49 moves and that's what you see a lot. And that's what kids, they like to go between their legs 74 times and that. And, you know, it's funny. They always say, whenever I'm coaching anybody, I'm like, look, your best move is no move, right? You just make a straight line drive and if you can do that, then you're great. If you're a guard and you got to go between your legs 17 times to beat a guy, you're not going to be very effective. But if you can make one move and go, it makes all the difference. And
everybody wants slam breaks on everybody, right? They want to snatch people. And I'm like, dude, if you don't flip their hips and they don't run downhill, like that's not going to work. So to your point, like straight line drives is where it's at. But I think the hard part is you think about the whole training industry right now and why people get paid to do things and why kids go somewhere and why a parent might say, hey, you take the kid and help him out or teach him some new stuff. It's kind of formed around giving all of that extra stuff.
Yeah.
So I feel like trainers are kind of in a tough spot because you have to play the game a little bit, right? You have to like, hey, here's some stuff that we could possibly get to, but like, you're not there yet. Right. And imagine you get a kid show up and you just work on rips and jabs. Like it would take a special breed of kid at this point in the world to really want to keep coming back and doing that. Now, if you can get those kids, God bless you, man. Like that would be, and I have some too, but it's not easy, right? It's not. And even when I talk to those kids tonight, I would be like, look, just jab and go. And they almost look like, that's it, man. Like, that's all. You know what I mean? So,
I think
the training industry in that sense is kind of in a tough spot just because it's kind of built around those things, you know, and I'm probably guilty of it too. But, I don't know. That's, you know, you look at social media and then you go to somebody's session, it could be 100% different. And I think that's the hard part is how we consume training content on social is starting to play an even bigger role. And then, you know, how kids perceive the game. And I know there's been a big kind of whirlwind about the highlight culture and things like that and how that's affecting how kids are seeing the game and what they think is actually supposed to be done. So, in that sense, I think the training industry is kind of in a tough spot, but, I don't know, you know, and I have conversations. I ask kids all the time, like, you know, I had another kid ask me, he's like, yeah, I'm having problems with my pump fake and like getting by somebody. And I'm thinking in my head, like, that's weird, man. That doesn't make any sense to me. Like a pump fake, you can't get by somebody. I'm like, okay, like, are you shooting in a game? He goes, well, no, not really. We kind of have a ball hog on, you know, on our team. And I'm like, well, how many threes do you shoot? And he's like, well, not really. And I'm like, what are you talking about a pump fake? If nobody's closing out on you, like, how is that even possible? Like, why would you be pump fake in the first place? Right. So, and then we proceed to have a conversation, like, how many shots are you shooting? And he goes, I have no idea. And I was like, well, how many practices a week? He goes, two for his club. He's in seventh grade. They don't have school ball yet out here in seventh grade. And, he's like, well, we have two practices. We've got an hour and a half. And I was like, okay, what do you do for shooting? He goes, well, we do like Tennessee shooting, which is some sort of, you know, I think a transition shooting drill, which is fine. And I'm like, outside of that, what else? And he goes, yeah, not much besides our warm-up. So I'm like, okay, maybe like 25 to 50 tops attempts, not makes, just attempts. And I'm like, you're getting 100 attempts off of that. And then I'm like, what else? He goes, I go to the Y. I'm like, all right, well, what do you do at the Y? And I already kind of know what's like, this is going to, you know, and we come out to like, hey, he's making around like 100 to 200 shots a week. I'm like, dude, that is not enough. This is not enough. You know, if your complaints are like, hey, I can't get to the rim. I can't score enough. I can't get by somebody. Like, it's very obvious. The first thing that clicks in my head is like, you probably don't shoot well in a game. Cause if you did, oh, that's so easy. That's not a problem at all. And I think as trainers, you know, right now in my training world, I see trainers left and right preaching all of their training philosophies. This is the way to train. This is the way to train. This is the right way to do this. Block practice, random practice, all this stuff. I'm like, dude, have any of us ever had a conversation with a kid about how many shots he's shooting a week? Because I don't think it's enough. They don't need to be doing anything crazy, but just standing there and shooting for a little bit longer than what they're already doing. And if they're not going to do that by themselves, then you need to do it with them. And then you need to teach them how to go and do it by themselves. And then when they get that down, yeah, we could talk about reactions and
short side of games versus one-on-one work or cones, if cones work, if cones don't work. I think a lot of kids aren't even at that point yet. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, it's a good point. I love the idea when you start talking about getting kids to take that extra time, right? Because part of it is if a kid only comes to you as the trainer and they work with you once a week, or maybe they work with you twice a week, but they're not going and doing things, you know, on their own, it's not going
to
work.
What are you supposed to do?
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to be their rebounder either, but like,
right.
I can't, what am I supposed to do? I think that's a lot of trainers' dilemma is like, I already know you're not getting the meat and potatoes. Like, I know you're not doing that by yourself. So I guess I have to be that guy right now. And nobody wants to be that guy.
Yeah. And to your point, I think the other part of it, and I know that I haven't been doing much training lately, but back when I was doing a lot pre-podcast, one of the things that was always a challenge for me is, you know, I think when you're working with a kid, again, depending upon what their skill level is, you know, at a certain skill level, and I was working with a lot of elementary and middle school kids where there's just a limit to what their skill level will allow them to do. And to your point, trying to find and come up with creative things that you can work on so that the kid's not bored, mm-hmm. but that is also something that they can actually do and that's actually going to be beneficial. Like, the planning process for me was always, I don't even know if I would say it was a challenge, but it was just something that I had to put a lot of time and thought into, okay, what am I going to do with this kid? Because look, here's what they need to be able to do, but how are some different ways that I could approach that so that the kid's not going to lose focus? Because to your point, when you're working with a kid and all you're going to work on is jabs and straight line drives, okay, there's not many 11-year-olds that are going to grind that out for an hour and not ever do anything else. So I do think, and I do see, and I felt it when I was doing the training, I felt that dilemma of how do you make your workouts fun and engaging, and at the same time, work on things that are actually going to be translatable to a game and that function at the kid's level where they're capable of actually doing what it is that you're trying to teach them.
100%. And I think if you're a trainer and you have that dialogue in your head, right, what you just explained, you're already doing a great job, because that is the whole point, is not stressing by any means and not like throwing out your whole world to try to figure this out, but like having the inner dialogue of like, how do I do this with this kid, instead of just saying, hey, come in here, we'll get a sweat, see you later. That I see that all the time too, where it's just like, this is a cardio workout with a basketball in our hands. This isn't training. This isn't development. This is like just get in, get out type of thing. And I think as trainers, as long as maybe we don't have all the answers and we don't know what strategy works best, but as long as you're seeking the right way to do things for that individual or that group or that camp, then you're doing the right stuff. And I think if we had the perfect answer, somebody would have a lot more money than, you know, all the rest of the trainers, but I think everybody's still trying to figure it out.
All right. Tell us a little bit about your journey to training after you finished your playing career.
Yeah. So I played 4 years at a small NAI. I scored a ton of points in high school, and then I went to going from a small school to NAI, like a 4-year college. I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about, I didn't know what shell drill was, like replay 2-3 zone. I didn't know, just basic like transition lanes, driving kick principles. I didn't know that stuff. Until I started playing more 3-on-3, and 3-on-0 type of actions where there's no rules. You just play off your teammates. That got real awkward for me because I just didn't have natural feel for what people were doing. So I went through this whole transition of like really struggling in college to learn a bunch of things. So I had an awesome college career that I would never trade for anything. Cause, you know, as a man, helped me grow up for sure. Taught me a lot of lessons that I'm still trying to grow from today. And it was just a grind. So when I got done, I was like, dude, you know, I can't wait for basketball practice to be like, I was over it because it was 4 years of some success, then struggle, then an injury, then a little bit more struggle, then success. And it was just such a roller coaster, and the practices were so difficult, and, all of these things. We went to 2 national tournaments, had all these great teams, but it was just, it felt at that point a little bit stressful. So I took some months off. When I got done, you know, and I was working a normal job for a marketing agency in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is an hour north of Sioux City, where I went to school, Sioux City, Iowa. And I started working for an agency, and I had no, dude, I had no idea what I was doing. I was just like a college kid. I was answering emails and forwarding things, and I don't know what I was doing. They were paying me to do stuff, and I would just go home afterwards. I have no idea. But that lasted about 8 months. And during that 8 months that I was working there, I started working for a club team in Sioux Falls, very small program. I coached a fourth grade boys team and occasionally did some training on the side. My marketing agency that I was working for got bought out by another company. And that company said, hey, Shane, you can apply for these jobs. Or if you feel like there's a better opportunity out somewhere else, go ahead. And you know, at that point, I'm sitting at a desk. Like I don't know what was going on with me, but like, I did not enjoy it. I don't know if it's just something in me where it's a structure thing or if it's somebody telling me what to do, like something there, right? That it was tough for me. So, I hit the, club guy up and I said, hey, you know, I will literally do whatever. I have the text and the emails. I was like, I will clean the bathrooms. I'll pump up the basketballs. I'll sweep, like whatever you need me to do. And I was like, if you can just give me a couple more hours outside of what you're paying me as a team, as a coaching fee, that would be great. I'm kind of in between things now and whatever. So I started working like part-time, full-time for this basketball club. And my parents are going crazy because they're like, dude, you got to figure it out. Like like basketball is not a thing. And this is 2015, 16 ish. And, so I'm doing that. And, all of a sudden, you know, these kids that I'm working with, they just love me. I don't know. You know, when you're young and you're out of college and you got energy, like it's easy to hang out with kids and it's easy for parents to, you know, be excited about you because you have more energy to give them.
Right.
And as a youth coach, that's literally the number one requirement is like a smile and energy and just positive, saying positive things. And the kids got a lot better. I had no idea what I was doing. I was like YouTubing drills and I saw tennis balls and I saw Drew Hanlon and I saw whatever I could see. Right. And that's all I was doing. You know, and a couple of kids needed some extra work and people thought I knew what I was doing because I played college basketball. So I just started training like fourth graders on the side. And then while you're in a gym with other clubs or other teams practicing, other people see you work out. And then, you know, I would just randomly pick up another client. And the club guy, you know, they weren't doing a ton of workouts. So he's like, hey, I'll give you 50% of whatever you bring in. And I was like, dude, done. Like I got a phone bill. My dad was like, bro, I'm not paying for anything. You're a grown man now. You do you. And I was like, all right. So at any point I was just like, yeah, workouts, extra team practice. You need me to coach your team this week and I'll do it. And I think that was the biggest thing for me. It was like, I was willing and ready just to grind. And, I did that for a long time. I did that for 2 or 3 years, where I was coaching the club team and doing training on the side and stuff like that. So that's kind of how I transitioned into it was I took a break after college because I was honestly burnt out. I kind of refound my love for basketball when I honestly started playing men's league. And I was like, oh, I'm free again. Like I can do whatever I want to do. And, you know, I don't have this, you know, coach yelling at me and all this sort of stuff. And there's no leash on me if I miss and whatever. Right. So I kind of fell back in love with basketball and I just was like, dude, I love being in the gym. I don't know what's going on, but this is great. And, yeah, that's kind of how it started.
It's kind of funny how you think about your college experience and compare it to your high school experience. I think there's a lot of players that experience sort of that honeymoon with your high school program. And then you get to college and it becomes a lot different. And I know when I was playing college basketball, one of the things that I loved was when the season was over, I could go back and I kind of had the same feelings that you had. I would go back and play pickup basketball like the day after the season ended because I just wanted to be able to play loose and free. And I mean, I was a kid who like, I didn't play very much as a freshman, but as a sophomore and junior and senior, like I averaged like 37 minutes a game. So it wasn't like I had a short leash or anything. I mean, I was basically out on the floor, but nonetheless, it just was the idea of just being able to play pickup basketball and just go out and kind of do your thing and not worry about somebody chirping at you.
Yes.
There's a lot of guys that feel that. I think that's one of the things that if you could educate players and parents about, I think they have this sort of pie in the sky view of what college basketball is. And don't get me wrong, it was great. I had great experiences and great teammates and people that have had a lifelong influence on me without question. But there were certainly days where it was a grind. I mean, I can remember sitting in the dorm room at times going, oh man, like practice is coming in a half hour. Like, I'm not sure how excited I am to go there. And I'm a kid who loved, I mean, I love basketball. And I know there were teammates that I had and other guys that I've played with over the years who didn't love the game nearly as much as I did. And so for me to feel that way, I know that it's tough. Yeah. And I think a lot of people out there, you know, parents and players as they're coming up through and, you know, everybody's dreams to get a scholarship and play college basketball. But I think there's still a misunderstanding about what college basketball really is all about.
I agree. And I think once you sign that letter of intent, you post it on Twitter, everybody's excited. You have your signing day and then you leave and it's like, there's like seven people that kind of follow up, you know, like,
right,
exactly. Unless you're playing locally, like you just, you know, and especially when you retire, like when you stop playing. And I actually went back to Morningside, the school I played college at. And I talked to the whole team about this stuff. Like there's some guys on this team that I know what you're going through. And what you have to understand is things are just different now. And the best way to make you, the best way for you to feel a part of this and not envious and not whatever jealousy or whatever you might be feeling is to just carve out a role and start there. And if that role expands, that's great. But at least just feel like you're a part of it. That could be on the bench. That could be like, for me, I was like, when I was younger, you know, a freshman and sophomore, I was like, look, I'm not playing that much. I'm literally just going to guard the best player. And if I get cooked, that's whatever. But if I stop him, it's going to be awesome. And I just kept putting myself in those situations and stuff like that paid off. But like, and I also told him, like, when you're done playing, nobody remembers anything. Like you played college basketball for 4 years. You didn't quit. You're a part of national tournament runs. You were a part of conference titles, like whatever it was. You're a part of this whole family. Like, and when I went to go give that speech, like five people that were at Morningside, like the staff, like, hey, Shane, what's going on? Like they all remembered me. And I was like, right. I'm just a part of this. I go to the alumni games. I do all these things for them still. And nobody even remembers if I scored 2 points or I scored 2,000 points.
Exactly.
They just know that I was a part of it. And that's something that I think I struggled with. Obviously, in the moment, you struggle with it. And even right after school, I struggled with it. But now I'm like, I'm so proud of it. And I'm so proud of my teammates and how good they were. And I've kind of accepted, like, look, dude, Shane, you came from a small town. You were kind of like, it's just the situation it was. You came in underdeveloped, but they loved how raw you were and you made the most out of it. And I actually talked to a senior when I was a freshman. He's done. It was his last game. We just lost. And I was like, you know, what are you worried about? Like, what's your goal? And he goes, dude, the only thing I've been worried about is like having no regrets. I didn't want to leave Morningside feeling like I could have tried to do something more. And when I was going through those hard times, I literally, this sounds cheesy, but that's like all I remembered. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to go home in the summer. I lived in Sioux City for 4 years and I did not like Sioux City. To be honest, I didn't love it. It was okay because my boys were there, but like I could have went home back to the farm and been in my comfort zone. And I didn't. I stayed there for 4 years, went to every off-season lift, never missed anything. Not a lift, not a meal, not a meeting, not a extra shoot around, nothing. And when I got done, I was like, you did it. You just did everything you were supposed to do. And that was kind of the message we gave those kids was like, just be a part of it. Be happy to be here and do your best.
It's funny what sticks with you, right? So that conversation is one that could have easily gone away, but for whatever reason, it stuck with you. I say this all the time, like as a coach, that there's things, and obviously that was a player-to-player conversation, but oftentimes it's a player-coach situation. I'm sure you probably have things that a coach told you that you remember that fueled you in some way, or maybe it made you mad or it inspired you or whatever, that you remember that you could probably go back to that coach and be like, hey coach, do you remember when you said da-da-da to me? And they'd be like, I have no idea. I don't remember that conversation at all. And yet those are things that stick with you. And I think sometimes as a coach, it's important to kind of reflect on that and just make sure that you think about the way that you're talking to kids or the things that you're saying to them and how, depending on what you say, you can inspire them or you can tear them down super easily.
Man, you know, when you're in those dark, kind of not dark spots, but when you're in those ruts on a team, a coach says one single thing to you, like positive, it means the absolute world. Like, you know, I don't know if it's a compliment, if it's a, hey, good job, or hey, we like the way you do this, like something positive, or like, you know, just pointing out something, even if it's privately, right?
that literally, like, that is just like you go from an empty tank instantly to a full tank by just one comment. And that happened to me multiple times out there in school. And, you know, even when I did get to play and I played well, those moments were like, it would get goosebumps just after the games. Like, holy crap. Like, that was so fun. And it meant even more to me. So, you know, as a coach, exactly what you said, like what we say and how we say it and in the moments that we say it, especially if somebody feels like what they're being, you know, what they're doing or sacrificing isn't being seen and they're still continuing to do it. That's the perfect time to go up to somebody and say, hey, I see what you're doing. Keep it up. Like that'll get their tank full right away.
Yeah, it's powerful. I mean, so often I think it applies to life, right? It applies to just everyday life, right? That, you know, talking about being, you know, having gratitude and saying thank you and just being appreciative of things that people do for you or noticing what people are out there doing. And clearly as a coach, if you can recognize those kids, whether it's a kid who's your leading scorer or whether it's a kid who's your 12th player on the bench, you got to find ways to be able to recognize those kids. And the same thing with the training, right? Because you work with kids at all different levels. You may work with some high level kids, and then you're working with that 8 or 9 year old that may be, you know, just getting started. And so you got to figure out ways to give them that positive reinforcement to be able to keep them motivated and keep them going. I think that's a big part of, as you said, especially when you're talking about youth coaches, right? You smile and bring an enthusiasm and energy. And if you can do that, you're 98% of the way there to being a successful youth basketball coach. There's no question about that.
100%. I do this training mentorship, and I have about 8 or 9 trainers under me we just have conversations on the phone, and they're like, what is the secrets? What's this? How did you? And I'm like, dude, just show up on time. You know, be organized and be a good person. And I guarantee you, you'll beat like 95% of whatever competition's there. If you're just a good dude, you have fun with them. All that comes before however your training is. And, you know, I had a kid, 5th grader, his mom texted me beforehand and was like, look, he's going through a hard time. His AU coaches give him a hard time about him being a little too slow, struggling to shoot. And in my head, I'm like, dude, the kid's in 5th grade. Who cares if he's, he could suck for 6 years and he still have time. Like, it, you know, and he doesn't suck, but like he could struggle for 6 years and everything would be fine, but not in a kid's world. Right. So I have to understand that. And that was the message that, you know, we went and talked to him. It was like, look, just, you're so young, man. You don't have to be good now. It doesn't matter if you win now either. Just be a part of it and continue to grow. Keep showing up to workouts. Go to camps. You know, keep trying out. If you're on the 3rd team, 4th team, it doesn't matter for another 6 years. And I think conversations like that with kids need to happen more. I see kids coming to the gym stressed out of their mind, especially girls, because girls are getting offered D1s in 8th grade now, 7th grade. And I think a lot of girls are probably like, look, I'm in 7th grade. I'm not good. And my buddy just got a D1 offer. I'm like, yeah, no crap. You're not good in 7th grade. Like, you're not supposed to be. So I, you know, kids to me, I just see a lot of stressed out kids. I see a lot of kids that are doing a ton, playing, obviously trying to play multiple sports right now. I think it's probably harder than ever to do that. And they're tired and they are reading, motivational quotes on Instagram that tell them they got to get up at 5 a.m. and eat a full chicken and rice meal with a protein shake and then do, you know, run laps and whatever. Right. And it's, I don't know. There's just like we talked about before. I think there's some confusion. There's a lot of comparison and there always has been. But I think now even more with the amount of club teams and the amount of, you know, competition that there is, I think kids are kind of struggling a little bit. Even the top kids are struggling with some of that stuff.
Yeah. And it's parents too, right? I mean, I think parents, if we could do a better job of educating parents and get parents to understand. I mean, I think when you go, obviously there's some crazy high school parents, just like there is anywhere else, but you go and watch a 2nd or 3rd grade basketball game and it's like insane what you see parents doing, saying and yelling and all this stuff. And I always say, like, I have one, my daughter's a freshman in college and she stopped playing basketball her freshman year, played her freshman year of high school, then didn't play anymore. And I had a conversation with her about why. And she said, I'm not having as much fun with it. And I don't want to continue. And I said, okay, that's, you know, it's fine. and then my son right now is a high school junior, and then I got another seventh grader. And you see all these parents that are kind of going through the system, and you see how stressed they are and how worked up they are. And I think what I try to say, or what I try to think about with my own situation, is just like, look, relax. Eventually it's going to work out. Like, you made a great point about, don't worry if you're on the fourth team or the C team or the A team or whatever. Like, in fourth grade or fifth grade, none of that stuff makes any difference. What matters is, do you love the game and are you going to keep working at it? Because if you love the game and you're going to keep working at it, then eventually you're going to get better, and you're going to have opportunities. And there's going to be other kids who don't put that time in, don't love it as much, and they're eventually going to fall away. And if they fall away, it might be a good decision for them. They might find violin, or they might find art, or they might find math, or whatever it is. And so I think the bottom line is that you want them to love it, because if they don't love it, they're never going to work hard enough to be really good at it. And that's, I think, the best advice I could give for parents is just relax, keep giving your kids opportunities, enjoy watching them play. It goes really, really fast.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast, and Joe Stecision from Unleashed Potential, will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered.
I think one of the best things, and everybody's different, not everybody needs to be like my dad, because my dad has a lot of faults, as do I. But I just felt like he did such a good job of just naturally letting me be hungry for it. He fueled the fire at the right time, it felt like. Like, if he could clearly see I needed some break and I wanted to go play Madden, right, or whatever, he'd just let me, you know? And if I was doing that type of stuff too much, he'd let me know. And I just felt like he did a good job of naturally letting me love sports and want to do more and want to be great, and showed me examples of great players and showed me what great looks like. And he was an athlete, but he's a typical Midwest. He's 40-year-old kind of heavier farmer, right? Bald head, like, doesn't move very well and all this stuff, right? So it's not like he can show his athletic ability to me anymore, but he brought me to high school games. I thought those high school kids were like the greatest players in the world when I was young. Like, I think parents right now have a check in their hand and they're saying, here's $1,000. Who do I give it to? And they have no idea. And the easiest answer is give it to a club, because the kids need to be playing games, which isn't the answer. In fact, if anybody follows me on Twitter, you'll see that I'm begging parents to understand, and club teams to understand, that it is not about that. It's about developing. So clubs, I am not anti-club. I love club teams. I work with a bunch of them. I played on them. And I coached them. But there's also very bad ones, just like there's bad trainers, you know? And it's just that critical thinking part of, like, don't just blindly give your kid to a coach and then complain about it because it didn't go well. It's like, well, yeah, what'd you expect? You know, the coach isn't at half the practices. And have you watched the practices? All they do is lay up lines. Like, what did we expect? And I was talking to another dad the other day, and he goes, you know what? And we're talking about this stuff. And he goes, I've only seen one parent take their kid from the first team and take them down to a second team. I've only seen that happen once at our local club, or there's a bunch out here, but one of the local clubs out here. And I was like, God bless that mom or dad or whoever did that, because that probably was the best decision for them to say, hey, you can be the 9th, 8th, 7th guy in fifth grade, or go to the second team and your top three guy. And guess how many volume touches you're going to get? Guess how many times you're going to have the ball in your hand? Guess how many decisions you get to make now? Guess how many different positions you can play? Like, I would rather have my kid at a young age get high volume touches and high volume decision making
than be a part of a team, fifth grade team that wins tournament medals and runs, you know, a trap zone, all this other stuff. I just wouldn't care about that. And I think that's the hard part for parents is they, how they, you know, decide what a good program is if they're winning.
Yep.
And stuff like that. And obviously winning is great to teach. Like I'm not against feeling fires. I'm not against pushing your kids. And I'm definitely not against winning or competitiveness. I love that. I have to get after kids all the time about this stuff. Like it's time to win. Let's go. But I asked a kid the other day, I was like, when's your next tournament game? And he goes, I don't know. I'm like, well, is it this weekend? He goes, I think maybe. I don't know. I'm like, dude, if I was your age, I had a game, I would be. That's all I could think about for the whole week.
Right, exactly.
And if he misses this game, guess what? He's got 87 other games he'll have this year.
Yep.
So I think, I don't know. Those are my thoughts. And like I said, man, I'm trying to throw out some messages on Twitter. But again, am I going to change the whole scene? Of course not. And I'm not going to bang my head against the wall and hope that I do. I think if I can just give out some information of like any time from like third to all the way up to your freshman year, stuff like that doesn't matter. Right. And, you see it all the time too. Like girls, I have a girl that I work with that shoots with two hands and she plays on a competitive team. And I'm like, can we get some time? And they practice like two or three times a week. And then she has volleyball and school ball. And she doesn't have time to work on her shot, which is okay. For to me, it's okay. Like she doesn't need to come see me all the time. But I'm like, look, this is going to be a problem. I know that she plays a role because she's tall right now, but this is going to be a problem soon. Like we're hiding from a thing that's glaring at us. And, I think for a parent to pull a kid right now from a team, I don't know. I don't think that a lot of people could do that, which is tough.
It's development. I think it's development. And so often you talked about what makes a good club or a good coach. And especially when you're talking about these younger ages, I've always said that you've got to, in practice, you've got to be working on skill development. You got to be doing small sided games. You got to be giving kids opportunities to make decisions and have the ball in their hands. And yet you can go to lots of practices at all different levels when you're talking about youth basketball and you just see a coach who's working on their sets and five girls are out there going on air and the other five girls or boys are sitting on the sideline watching and you're running through this thing endlessly with no defense. And you're just looking at it going, if your players were just more skilled, you would win way more games. Like you're trying to get to a destination and you're trying to get there the wrong way. And ultimately, like you talked about in college and remembering certain things and games and how people remember and how you remember. Like I tell people, I'll have occasionally somebody will ask me, well, how'd you do in this game your sophomore year against a team that we played in our league? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, we probably played that team between the conference tournament and a regular season games. We probably played them 10 times. Unless I go back and look at the yearbook, I have no idea like what happened or scored. I mean, there's obviously some games that you remember, there's a lot of them that they kind of run together. And I think we get so caught up in the moment of we have to win. And, you know, you mentioned about, hey, we're going to run this half court trap. Well, of course it's effective because if you're trapping a fourth grade girls team,
they can't throw.
Yeah, right. They can't throw over the top. They can't make the passes. They're not strong enough. And so of course it's going to work if you have an athletic team that can move and get up and down the floor. And so I just think that there's so much more to the development. And I think, again, it's parent education, but at the same time, it's just a real challenge out there because, again, what do people see? People see winning and people chase winning. And then a lot of times you get new programs that win that maybe don't do it perfectly, but they're really good at recruiting. And they get a lot of really good players because they won. And then it kind of is this never ending cycle of a pipeline that keeps feeding players. And it's kind of hard to break that cycle. And you just, again, you wish you could get inside parents' ears and kind of let them see the journey before they go on it so that they could understand how much better their kid could be with just better development.
Yeah. And I think a question for all parents to ask themselves is like, yeah, we're winning, but how are we winning? That's more important than are we winning? How are we winning and how are we losing? Like, are we winning because of the zones or we're just taller than everybody?
because eventually there's going to be a team that's just as good as you are, if not better. Or you're going to be on a varsity team where, their girls are going to have to go toe to toe and see who's more skilled and who has more ability. That day will come. So we cannot continue to hide from it. And I have a clip, you know, I posted on, the anniversary of Kobe's death. And it was him talking on an interview, basically talking about youth coaching, how he would coach his daughter. And he basically said, like, you know, we take a step back. We could just micromanage, but we don't. And it's okay if we fail and if we lose, that's okay. But that's Kobe Bryant. A parent is going to be like, Kobe, whatever you say, whatever you say, sir, we'll do that. Right. If somebody starts a club team and like, hey, parents, we're not going to run sets, or we might have one skeleton offense where it's motion based with a couple down screens. But the whole time we practice, it's going to be skills plus concept work where we learn how to slip a screen, how to curl, how to hold a screen and roll. And then we play 3-on-3 driving kick principles. That's all we're going to do. And that is our goal. And we're going to do that for the next however many years. I don't know how many games we're going to win. But I guarantee you when your kids leave that they'll have a better understanding of actually how the game's going to go. And when they get to high school and potentially play college, if they ever could get there, they'll be way more prepared. If somebody did that, I don't know how it would go. I don't know if parents would really buy into it, or if parents would try it for a year and realize like, hey, we went, 2-14 on tournaments. I think a lot of people probably would jump ship. Right. So that's the tough part. That is the tough part is, kind of how do you gauge what's good development and what's probably going to hurt us in the future.
Yeah. If they stuck with it, I think you'd see the results eventually come on the scoreboard, but you're talking, that's a multi-year process.
Yes. Has to be for sure.
All right. Let's go back to your training, getting it started. So you're working for the club team. You're doing some training on the side. You're splitting revenue with the guy who's in charge 50-50. Talk about how you ended up breaking off and going out on your own. What did that look like?
Yep. You gain more clients. I did a bunch of stuff for free for some people just to like make it work. Social media has just started kind of going in that direction when it came to video, videos being posted in like 2016 ish. So I was, early, I was just like throwing stuff up, and I'm a young guy that's posting on social media. So kids think that's cool. And then I get kids to come in the gym. Then I get more hours working with these kids. So I am now becoming a better trainer. I just still at that point did not know what I was doing. I had gotten better, but I didn't have an understanding of footwork. I could watch Kobe do something or LeBron or whoever. And it was like in and out of my head. I'd be like, yeah, I know that looks good. I like that fadeaway, or I like that step, or I like that finish. For me to be able to go take that knowledge and teach a kid, I could not do that. And if somebody did a crossover and they dribbled immediately after and didn't take their motion steps, or it was clunky, I wouldn't know how to fix it. I just wouldn't have the answer. And then I met a guy named Reed Osi. I don't know if you guys follow Reed Osi on Twitter.
I know the name.
The dude is special, man. Like, he was mentored under DJ Sackman. He went through Micah's stuff and, eventually branched out on his own and, he coached 7 years at college. So he is, to me, is like this perfect mixture of like coaching and that understanding of the importance of it and what it means to be a coach and how important that is to be a trainer to understand coaching. And then he also understands like high level skill stuff. And I went to I saw he posted, and this is why I'm still working with a club. I saw you post on Instagram, like, hey, I need a rebounder tomorrow, at 8 a.m. for a session. And he's in Minneapolis. I'm in Sioux Falls. It's a 4-hour drive. I DM him. I'm like, hey, I'll be there. He's like, where are you from? I said, Sioux Falls. He's just like, okay. And I showed up. I left at 3:30 in the morning. I showed up and he just couldn't believe it. He's like, dude, you actually came here. And I was like, yeah, bro. Like, I think you're great. I don't know. And he's just like, he just didn't say much. We just started working and we worked for like 3 hours. He let me stay for more and they took me out to eat. And, I think he saw something in me. I think we're both from small town Minnesota, and I think he saw something in me, and he did so much for me. I mean, the dude literally changed my life, and it wasn't like he just, I wasn't in a bad rut. I wasn't in any of these places. I was just hungry and he fed me. And the philosophies he gave me and the understanding of how to communicate to people and to coaches and where the money's at and how to grow a business was so unbelievably valuable. And then he taught me the footwork stuff. When I went to his session, he's throwing out terminologies like drop and motion step and dribble step and just things with footwork. Different ways to stop, different ways to hesitate, and how there's terms to footwork patterns and how to get to these patterns and all these things. I didn't know. I thought he was speaking a different language. I was like, what are you taught? Like, what are you saying these words? Like, what does that mean? And he's like, oh, this is like a terminology that, you know, Micah came up with that DJ and them formed together. And now trainers, and right now it's called the BTA, Basketball Trainers Association. And, he taught me this stuff before it was even formed, and it changed how I done everything. Now I have answers. If somebody crosses the ball over wrong and, you know, maybe work on a crossover into a finish and they didn't finish it right, I could probably in my mind, slow motion, go backwards and see exactly what happened. And it's probably on the cross. It's probably not even on the finish. It's probably before that. So now I have all this knowledge and I am just like this hungry dog. And I'm just like, I'm going back to Sioux Falls. Like, oh my God, if I did this session that night at like 9 o'clock, I was so tired. I was like, I gotta get this out. And, I work with a college kid and it was great. And I just kept pouring into it. I literally would call him all the time and I'd send him a clip and I'd be like, hey, is this how you do this? Is this what this is called? Could I also get to this out of this option? And I don't know, man. I think God puts people in your life for all these reasons. And I tell him all the time, man. And he just says like, yeah, type of thing. I don't think he understands the impact, the mentorship he had on me. I don't think he understands the impact he has. He's made me so much. He's made me so much money. He's changed my life. He's changed my wife's life. He's helped me move places. He's helped me travel. I met pro clients. I've traveled the world because of him. And I have my own business now. So I met, you know, that was a long story, but I met a mentor and he changed my life when it comes to basketball training and how I did things. So I started my own business. I hit the club guy up and I was like, yo, I want to try to do this myself. I'll pay you rent. And he's like, done. I don't know. This is another great guy, but he said, done. You pay me $1,500 for that short-sided cord over there. Anytime I use it, I'll pay you back the whatever, you know, rent price you're paying me. So I was like, this is great. And I already had all my clients lined up in Sioux Falls. So I start doing this. We're growing. Social media starts taking off because now videos are even more important. And, I'm just going all in, man. I know nothing about branding. I don't know anything about taxes. I don't know anything about anything. You know, liability, like insurance. I know nothing. And, I just keep pushing, man. And I make a name for myself in Sioux Falls. Sioux Falls is a decent sized city. It's not huge by any means, but it's the biggest in South Dakota. It's a decent sized city in the Midwest. And I start getting all these kids and I start getting overseas kids or overseas guys. I start getting NBA G League guys. I get an NBA player in South Dakota to train in South Dakota for like just to train with me. And that's like people don't go to South Dakota to train, right? And then the Pentagon, Sanford Pentagon calls me. And the Sanford Pentagon, if you guys don't know, is like this massive facility in Sioux Falls. It's got, let's see, 9 courts. It hosts the Sioux Falls Skyforce, the Miami Heat G League. And it's just, you know, they have club teams, they have all this stuff. It's a beautiful place. They, you know, they host big college games. I was just at Gonzaga, Iowa there a couple of years ago, stuff like that. They run an academy and they're going to pay me a salaried position. And I looked at my wife. And I was like, this has got to be. And at this time, when I'm running my business, I'm making good money. But like you're just starting and you're like, I'm like 25, 26 years old. These guys call and say, here's a salary. Here's benefits. Here's a blank canvas. Do what you want to do. And I was like, boom. This has got to be the best job in basketball, right? So I start doing this for a while. And they said, hey, we are, you know, you have all these kids and they're training on this like weird gym with a sport court that has water coming through the roof. Why don't you just bring them all over here to this premium thing? We have a whole field house where they can lift at. We have, you know, therapy. We have all these things. And I was like, this is great. And I was like, I just don't want to do anything with teams. I'm over teams. I'm sick of going to the tournaments. I don't want to do it. And they're like, okay, you pick somebody that you want to hire to run the teams. You run training, deal. And I was like, that's great because I don't want kids to think I was affiliated with something. I didn't want them to think like I have to play for the Pentagon,
right,
in order to train for Shane or train with Shane. So I said, just separate me. It's going to help. And we started getting kids from other clubs. Now other clubs are mad at me because I have this great gym and all these kids are coming here.
And it went really well. We started 3-on-3 programs. We started a read and react academy, which is I still run today. And it's like one of my, it's just a short sided game camp and it is awesome. We did all these awesome things and, we threw in like all these other development opportunities for teams. So all of our teams that played with us, they'd get their practices, they'd get their games, but then they'd get access to all of these, like, just like I talked about, the read and react, 3-on-3, the skill workouts, footwork and finishing, like all this stuff. And it was such a good flow. And then they hit me one day, 2 years in, they're like, Shane, we want you to coach our 17U and we want you to do all these extra stuff. And I was like, at that point, I was like, dude, I have no interest. I just don't want to do it. And, I left, on pretty good terms. I left and, went to a warehouse space in Sioux Falls that had no AC. That was 26 by 50. And I had sport court and, we took all the kids and they started working out with it in there. And I was so concerned about how, kids would react to that. And they did not care. You know, I could have been out on the street and they would have came and worked out with me. And it made me very, very happy to see that happen. So that's kind of how it went, man. It went from that club to a salary position where I thought I was on top of the world to me realizing maybe I'm capable of more. Maybe I'm, my name can be built more. Maybe I can spread out more. And then I went back to, you know, owning my own business. And that's kind of where we're at.
All right. So let's go to the business side of it. You mentioned earlier, like you didn't know much about anything when it came to running a business. So I don't want you to go through every single aspect of what you have to do behind the scenes, but is there some aspect of the business side of it that appeals to you that maybe you wouldn't have thought you would have liked doing that particular thing as you got into it? Or is it completely the business side, like, eh, it's just a necessary evil? Or is there some parts of it that you like?
I love, there's some stuff that I can't stand for sure. There's like, I would say my stepmother is an attorney. God bless her. She does my taxes, which is great. Because I would be lost. The insurance stuff, we got that figured out. Like there's a bunch of that stuff that is not my favorite, but I understood that needs to be done. And I put people in place to help me, which is huge because I would be lost without them. When it comes to content, there's one of my favorite things in the world to do is to create content, training content. Like I'm addicted to it. Like I really love just to create stuff, whether it's for fun, whether it's entertainment, whether it's education. Like I really love, and it's not an attention thing for me at this point. I want to be the best, you know, the most followed trainer. That's not really what I want. I'm kind of finding out that I run into kids and like, dude, I follow you. I use your stuff all the time. That feels great to me. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about. Like, you know, Minnesota, Southwest Minnesota Shane, 10 years old. If he had Instagram, like, I think he might be in heaven because there's so much stuff. He might be a little confused, but he might be in heaven because there's so much stuff. And, it really does drive me to post content. I have a blast doing it. I have a training app, that we post new programs in there all the time and we're always working on, like I'm working on this skilled guard program that's been challenging, but it's fun. I was just working on it today and then just obviously pouring everything we can into Instagram, TikTok and Twitter. That to me is a blast. And then, you know, getting more clients and seeing the growth financially is, obviously very good for me as well. Gives me a little bit more freedom to travel with my wife. When I know that we're on vacation and a piece of basketball paid for it, like it makes me feel pretty special because there's a lot of times when I was a trainer that again, my dad is a farmer. My stepmom's an attorney. Like those are pretty stable. Farming's a little sketchy, but like, they're pretty stable jobs, you know, and they always wanted me to do something. And it's weird when you're on a new adventure and your closest loved ones maybe aren't the most supportive in the moment. And I definitely don't hold that against them, but they pushed me for sure. But it was a weird feeling, right? And now to see kind of where we've built things and how much more we want to go and how excited we are, that part to me is pretty special.
Do you have a team that helps you to create the videos and the content?
Man, no.
So it's just you.
It's me, an iPhone, and a tripod in our little warehouse gym. So no, man. And I don't know if that's, I'm not bragging by any means. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's just been,
yeah, it's just been me. It's just been me in the gym, loving basketball and still loving to play to this day, still loving to work out and just kind of get in there and shoot stuff.
If it's something that you enjoy doing and you can do it yourself, then obviously from a business perspective, you save some money for sure. You're far better off, no question. If you love it and you can produce quality content, which you do, then you can get in there and do it yourself and save some money, which obviously falls eventually to the bottom line.
Right. I had somebody built the website, built the app. Like I've done it. When it comes to content, that's just in social stuff. That's all me. But yeah, you know, I have people in places that will do the more complicated stuff.
Yeah, that's what I always say. Like I've had two websites built. So I have one for my camp business, and I've got one for the podcast that we had somebody build the website. But then I've gotten good enough with WordPress that I can go in and do lots of updates and stuff. I could never build the website, but once the website is there, I'm pretty capable. That's something that I enjoy. When I go in and I'm fooling around and adding this or doing that, that's stuff that I enjoy kind of tinkering with and figuring it out. It's just kind of funny how things that you might never have thought that really are tangential to your business that you kind of take to that you're like, hey, I really want to do more of this stuff. It's kind of cool.
I know. When I get a good piece of content filmed and I'm editing and I see the product, I'm like, man, this is, and it's going to go and it's going to disappear, you know, and some posts stick longer and obviously training content will stay longer, but yeah, it's just good. And then you know, obviously you get people that'll come up to you and say thanks and stuff like that. And obviously that feels good too, but you know, it's you get one life, and the more free stuff I can give out, the better. So yeah, it's been good for me.
That's impact, right? I mean, being able to touch people who you maybe can't touch them physically in person, right? You can get that out in front of them. I think that's a big thing. And when you start thinking about how can I have a greater impact than just with the people that I'm in front of on the court every single day, to be able to have that content, to know that there's people out there that are utilizing that to help improve their game and become better players. That's got to be a gratifying piece of what you do for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And even, it's that, and it's, I have some coaches that will reach out to me from smaller towns and be like, would you ever consider coming here? I'm like, yeah, for like, and they want to do a camp. I'm like, for sure. I would go to small towns all the time to do camps because that's how I grew up. And it's honestly where I make a good chunk of revenue is literally going to small towns, 30 kids, 50 kids. That would be a big turnout for a lot of these towns, right? And you do a camp and these kids, like, you know, a lot of them aren't super skilled, but like, it's an opportunity. It's a place where they have somebody new come in that does it for a living, and it's pretty special to them. And it's something that I never had. And it wasn't anybody's fault where I grew up. It just, we didn't have it. And I'll go back home and do camps back in my hometown. And those are always really satisfying for me just because I get to see the same kids. I have some relatives that are coming up, and it's good. So yeah, it's a mixture of the, I think the most satisfying parts are the most like parts where I feel really happy doing this is posting the content, doing a lot of virtual stuff is like really great for me. And then doing these camps, whether it's a big event or a kind of a small town event, those are always fun. Obviously, I love what I do in my local academy with the local kids. That's always a blast, but I just didn't grow up like this, you know, like I didn't grow up in a kind of, I'm in Des Moines now, which isn't like a major city, but it's a decent sized city. And I just did not grow up like a lot of these kids. And it's funny because I was having a conversation with one of my old buddies, and I was like, yeah, man, there's a piece of me that wants me to go back to, you know, Southwest Minnesota, build a gym in the middle of a cornfield and just post stuff and just, you know, grow the virtual stuff and just go that route and just travel and do camps and always just come back to that spot. I think a piece of me honestly would be happy doing that. So maybe in the future, maybe down the road, if my wife literally would ever even consider that.
When you're home, what does a typical day look like? Like how many hours are you spending in the gym on a weeknight in the summer or during the season? Just give us an idea of kind of what your, if there is a typical day, just how much you're in the gym.
Yep. When I started, very unbalanced, still sometimes today, I'm definitely, and I tell this to my trainers all the time, like I don't have it all figured out. So I still am kind of unbalanced at times. And there's times in the year where I have to be. And, I think right now in the winter, it's anywhere from, you know, kids in school, it's 4 to 9. So like tonight I was done at 7:30. Some nights you're done at 6. So anywhere in that window, you could have, you know, 4 sessions to 5 sessions max on a weekday. I do work Saturdays and Sundays. When the Vikings were playing, I took most Sundays off, but they lost, and that was very unfortunate. Still not over that. So now I'm back on Sundays, and we do a couple sessions on the weekend. But to be honest with you, you know, over the last couple of years, my goals have been to do less, honestly, on the floor with my local kids. Not because I don't want to see them and help them, but just because I want to teach them how to do stuff by themselves. I want to put somebody else in place, like another trainer, to help other kids as well, not just me. And I want to go home. You know, we don't have any kids. My wife is 32. I'm 30. We don't have any kids. We have two dogs that I love. I love to go to Florida because it's the opposite of the Midwest. We love to travel. So, that's kind of the balance is, I sometimes when I wake up, I'm like, okay, this is going to be a great day because I'll wake up not super early, like 8 o'clock, 8:30. I will, go say what's up to the wife. I'll make some breakfast for everybody, feed the dogs, whatever. And then it's either me working out is just general fitness. And then it's off to the gym to film content, whether that be for social, for the app, for whatever. And putting that content places, or maybe it's a podcast, something like that. And then you get a little window break where you get to eat, and then you go do your sessions kind of throughout the evening, which is a good life, to be honest with you. It's really fun. I don't always like working in the evenings. I actually like getting kind of my sessions done a little bit earlier and having my evenings off, but that doesn't really happen until kids get out of school. So yeah, that's kind of the flow for now. But I do think going forward, we're going to be doing hopefully some more events where we'll be doing more camps in the summer and stuff like that. So yeah.
What's the process for promoting those camps?
Well, I tell trainers all the time, man, that the Twitter is where it's at when it comes to connecting with coaches. Like that is where probably 99% of my camp inquiries have come from. Instagram, I have not got TikTok is not where it's at. I know that. Instagram, you're not going to get a ton. So I connect with a lot of coaches on Twitter. We have a list of people that we've worked with in the past. We just hit them up and say, hey, are you looking at booking another one? And just make sure we do a good job. Like I said, man, we have a lot of small towns, people, especially in Nebraska and South Dakota and in Iowa. I'm starting to get more in Iowa, but just small towns that don't have opportunity. I feel like the Midwest is pretty untapped when it comes to training or trainers. So I have plenty of opportunities out here to do that. I just want to do more. One, it's good for business for me. You get a little bit more bang for your buck, more for your time. But I also feel like the impact is bigger. And now that we have our virtual academy and our app, like we'll be able to go to these camps and I'll give all the coaches the app for free. And then we'll give a big, pretty steep discount for all the kids to access to the app so they can continue to work on stuff too, which is going to be new to this summer. So we're excited about that.
Explain to people what the app's all about, what they get.
Yeah. So basically you can do a month-to-month thing. You can do 6 months. You can do a full year. You can do lifetime access to it. It is an app that you can download right on your phone. You open it up and it's just workout programs. We have a weekend program. We have a daily handle program. We got a shot rebuild program. We have short side of games. We have a weekly workout program that we're super excited. So it's going to be something that we put together that we are going to pour a ton of energy in. We don't want to, and I've done apps before where it almost felt like we just dump a bunch of content in there and just see how long it goes. This one to me is more of a living, breathing piece of my business. And it's something that, you know, I hope supplies revenue for me, but also gives people far away from me as much training opportunities as possible and gives people those answers that they're kind of looking for. And anybody that trains with me in person in Iowa gets it for free. So now if a kid, you know, is struggling with their weekend, but in that session, we couldn't really work on it, I'll say, hey, go to the Y and do the weekend program that we have in the app. Right. And it's basically another added value to our business for kids to kind of take advantage of.
Yeah. To be able to have that and be able to give kids that extra access. It goes back to what we talked about before, right? That just getting training for an hour or two a week is not going to get it done. You got to be able to put the time in outside of your work with the trainer and utilize the things that a trainer's been teaching you. And for you to be able to have that app to be able to push those workouts to kids so they can see it and can continue.
Well, it's something that I've told other trainers too that I work with now. Like, you don't have to have an app. You could write up on a document, like a piece of paper, and hand the piece of papers out. Like, here's a 250 made shot workout. Here is a handle workout you can do in your garage. Give them a piece of paper. Because it's the thing we just talked about. It's the thing that we complain about the most as trainers. Like, these kids, they ain't doing it at home. It's like, well, what are you giving them? Because some kids don't know how to do that. No, they didn't have a situation where somebody taught them how to do that. They didn't watch a Timberwolves game. They don't have that. So, and like, if I had a kid and she wanted to be, or he wanted to be a tennis player, I'd have no idea what to do. I'd maybe go try it, but like, I would be looking for resources. So I think as trainers, it's an easy cop out to kind of say that. And I think if you're going to back yourself up, you might as well give some free added value.
Yeah, and that's pretty easy to do, right? I mean, if you're taking the time, like we talked about, to plan and put together a workout for each individual kid, and you're getting that quote lesson plan together for them before every workout, it's not really a stretch to then take some extra time and put that together, whether it be through video or an app like you have, which is obviously on the advanced side. But even like you said, just to give them a printed document that has this workout on, or hey, work on this, or here's what we worked on today. Let's double down and do these things between now and the next time I see you. I know that's one of the things that I try to talk to kids about all the time was, hey, this is what we just worked on. Now you need to go and put some time in to start to really get the reps you need in order to be able to master this, because you're never going to be able to master it once or twice a week. It's just never going to come. You got to put more time into it in order to be able to master those things. And so I think if you can do that, you're doing kids a really good service.
Yep. No, 100% agree. And it, like we said, I think it's easy for in, and you don't need to have apps and stuff. A piece of paper will do.
Absolutely. All right. Before we wrap up, I want to ask you one final two-part question. Part one, when you look ahead over the next year or two, you kind of talked and hinted a little bit about some of the things that you want to do, but what do you see as being your biggest challenge in your business over the next year or two? And then the second part of the question is, when you think about what you get to do every single day, what brings you the most joy? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
Biggest challenge is going to be figuring out a balance of where I want to spend my energy. If I want to spend more energy on the virtual stuff, if I want to spend more money or more energy on the camps or the in-person stuff, do I want my own gym space that's, got wood floor, all the bells and what? Do I want that? Do I need that? It's making decisions like that of like, how do I want the rest of, the next, 10 years to look like? Do I want to be on the road more? So I think for me, the biggest challenge is like starting to dabble in different areas, right? With the virtual stuff, doing more camps and just seeing how I feel. And if I love it, man, I'm the type of person that will just pour into that stuff and make it work. Whether it was working really well or not, I will pour a ton of energy into it. And we're trying something new. I have a buddy of mine that we're doing a podcast with. And we're just trying it, and we're going to see if we like it or not. And if it's something that feels like it's kind of nagging, or if it's a good way to get just our thoughts out. And, so far it's been good, but just, for me, it's going to be trying to figure out where to put the energy. And then also finding, some help and making sure that I build an academy where parents don't feel like, our kids feel like, I'm the only resource.
Right.
Getting another trainer in place with me where it's like, we're going to this gym to work out with this program. We're not just training with Shane. It don't matter who's there, because this gym, when we walk in the door, we feel comfortable. It's safe. We can make mistakes. There's nobody recruiting us, and it don't matter if Shane's there, if Joe Schmo's there, it doesn't matter, because we're going to get better. That's what I want to build, because that's the healthiest way for kids to work and to hear different voices. And then, stuff that makes me the most happy. Oh man, traveling right now with the wife is a blast. Anytime I can get a little bit of time out of the gym and just really soak it up and like put the phone down, it always feels very good for me. And then when I come back, it's always fun to get to meet those kids. When it comes to training, what makes me the most happy is seeing kids drop the stress when they get to this point at our gym, when they come through the doors and it's just like, I love this place. That is the best feeling. And we had a ton of, and we're still growing here in Des Moines. We just moved out here a couple months and had the gym maybe for 2 months now. But back in South Dakota, man, it was this tin shed that had no AC, but like, dude, just a safe place. We'd open the garage door. The vibes were high. The music was playing. Like, it was just fun. It was competitive. And it was a place where kids would be like, look, I might suck today. I might be great. Regardless, this is going to push me in a positive way. And I'm happy to be here. That to me is like, That's the best feeling in the world. So
it's good stuff. It's well said. And I think that if you can do that, you feel good about what you're doing. That's obviously what it's all about. You've got a lot of exciting things going on and you've been able to grow. And anybody who's been in the business knows that it's not easy to get to the point where you've gotten to and all the things that you've been able to do with your business. Kudos to you for being able to do that.
Thank you.
Before we get out, I want you to be able to share where people can find out more about what you're doing. So share all your social media handles, website, email, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yep. No, it's Hennin_workouts on basically everything, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, HenninWorkouts.com for the website. And you'll find information on training camps and the virtual app that we talked about. But yeah. There's a lot of free stuff that we post as well. So if financially doesn't make sense, don't put any pressure on you. There's free stuff all the time. So you just got to find ways to organize it. So that's where you guys can find me.
Shane, can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to jump on with us tonight. It's been a lot of fun getting to know your story and learning a little bit more about you and your training business. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.